It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Glad to have you. As always, we've got a tremendous show, and we'll start off with Kyle from Grange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, David?
Glad to have you here on a Friday. We're getting ready for the weekend, and we have two great interviews today, plus we have the post-game press conference with Coach Joe Dooley after the Temple loss. Unfortunately, Pirates go down 85-74. We'll have that in the show as well, a full recap of the game. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot, guys.
I want to have you on, you guys, because we've got a big show for this weekend, obviously, and we've got two great interviews. One, we've got Matt Jabs. We've got the big senior day for swimming, and they're having their last meet. We've got that interview. Plus, we have the interim basketball coach for the ladies, Nicole Mealing. We'll be talking to her. And, of course, again, the post-game press conference all coming up on the show. Guys, we want to do the roundtable, and I know there's a lot to talk about. So where do you want to start, Bubba?
Let's start off with John Gilbert's letter to the Pirate Nation that was put out on Thursday afternoon via ecupirates.com. I think that was tremendous, and let's talk about that.
All right, I did think it was great. You know, I feel like my inner Kyle's coming out, but the previous administration, I'll just say this, would never have done what John Gilbert's done. And let me back up. I want to say something before I say the letter. Wednesday night, John Gilbert was at the game, and the previous athletic director was at the game, but he was looking at big donors and maybe former athletes that were professional, you know, football players or whatever. But John Gilbert was actually up in the upper bowl shaking people's hand at the end of the ball game. All throughout the game, he had been walking around the arena, and that just meant a lot to me. And then followed by this letter, I think what I told Bubba Kyle yesterday, so far so good with John Gilbert. What do y'all think?
No, I agree. I do think Dave Hart has made him aware of the situation here and the way people have felt because of Jeff Comfer. And to Gilbert's credit, he's done what he needed to do. He's come in and shaking hands and kissing babies and you know, releasing the letter and noted that would be a common occurrence, and that was something that that, you know, Holland did, and a lot of people love the letters from the desk of Terry Holland.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was tipped off to that too. But that's to his credit. You can be told all kinds of stuff. If you don't take the advice, then it ain't going to do you no good. So he's taken
right.
The advice that I'm sure has been given to him. And you know, the letter was informative. It was encouraging. He addressed that he gave a timetable for announcing the sixth opponent for the upcoming football season. That's no fault of his own. He's in a tough situation there. I thought the letter was good. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction to get that communication and transparency from the athletic department to the fan base.
What'd you think, Bubba?
One of the things, I agree with everything that Kyle said. I really think that also the point that he made as far as a revamping of the Pirate Walk, I'm interested to see what goes on there and whether that's moving the location and then also just maybe enhancing the marketing and promotion of it as well as just the way it's done. So that's going to be interesting. I don't know, maybe they're going to move it to the other side of the stadium, incorporate the south side tower into things. That would be my guess.
Yeah, and we need to, even though the, you know, it sounds like I'm picking on them, I am not. You always need to be thinking ahead and thinking of ways that we can improve. We have the best game day atmosphere, in my opinion, period. And I think there's things we can improve and always add. If you're not growing, you're dying. And so it'll be nice to, the older I get, I want to keep things the same. But at the same time, I know that if we keep things the same, then we're going to die. So
we used to have the best game day atmosphere.
Talking about, we have the best fans. Once the winning starts, people will come back. There's no question about it.
Yeah. One thing something that can be addressed with Gilbert that would improve the game day atmosphere. I don't know what we can do about our marching band. We need more members. And also the music in the stadium needs to be addressed.
Yeah, talking about the Marching Pirates, Kyle, maybe that's something that's going to change as well with the revamping of the Pirate Walk. In previous years, I know they only use a small portion of the band. And a lot of times when you see the walk.
A small portion of the band? What, one? Because, I mean, all we got is like five members left.
As far as that goes, when you see the walks, when you see it at the University of Georgia or Tennessee or where have you, then that's a lot of times, you know, they'll have the entire marching band. So that's something that I think would be good.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things they could do to revamp the Pirate Walk to make it cooler. I'd be interested to see. I could check with my buddies at USM and see if they have a tradition like that and what theirs was like. That may give us some indication of what ours may be like.
We seem to have an atmosphere where it's family friendly, where we can have a whole like an event, and that's it. In other words, we've got to do the whole strategy should be that there's a reason why you go to the game. Because if you have nothing to offer other than show up 20 minutes before the game starts, then people are going to stay at home. I have the Wi-Fi there. Kyle, I know you have the Lazy Boy. I mean, we can get, like, the Lazy what? Boy. You get, like, maybe five, you know, you got the short amount of feet for the to the bathroom. I thought the, like, when we had those food trucks, those kind of things are really awesome. More choices as far as that. The other thing is, as far as the stadium is concerned, I really want to see the concourse area. I want to see a facelift of that. It's been that.
Yeah, it is bare looking. It doesn't look good. I do like the food choices with Villa Verde, yeah, and some of the other things
like Parker.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think it's ugly underneath the stadium, the concourse area. It'd be nice if we could pretty it up some.
You know the way that, you know, for example, you know the way that the Boneyard area looks? That looks really good. Like the Boneyard area, all that, like the other end where the pirate statue is, you know, on that side.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. I don't know. How do you guys feel about the music in the stadium? Because I think, except for a few songs, I think it's pretty garbage. The music in the stadium, except for a couple songs, I find it to be pretty much garbage.
What we need to do is to have it where you have some. You've got to, as a DJ, a mobile DJ like I am, you have to appeal to a huge audience, which is tough. Having said that, there's songs that you know that are popular right now that you can play. There's songs of the, you know, like my parents' age, probably be, I'd say the 70s, late 60s, early, like 70s, as far as age, people that age, so like Motown, stuff like that. You've got people in our age group that would want, you know, 70s to the 90s, definitely. You know, you have people that are millennials, so they would want the 2000s. So you have to kind of sprinkle in and find songs that are like stadium rock songs, and then you have to put it all together. It's not an easy task, but it can be done.
Oh, it's easy. You just play stuff that rocks. It's a football game. We don't need love songs, and we don't need anything corny. Just play stuff that kicks ass.
So you put some ZZ Top in there?
Yeah, sure, ZZ Top. You know, Metallica. Play some hip-hop in there. A lot of the players and students like that. I mean, just play stuff that gets you going and fired up. I mean, you know, Living on a Prayer is great because all the interaction, but, you know, a lot of the on the topic of game day atmosphere, I'm a music guy, and I think a lot of the music players are garbage.
There's songs that are sing-along songs like that, like that Living on a Prayer has become. Those kind of songs are the ones, you know, like with, like Journey.
Don't stop believing. Oh, God.
Everybody sings that song. Well, I know, I'm just saying, for some reason, that song has become, I'm not saying the song rocks. I'm saying it's a song that you could probably get away with
No, you can.
People would hear it. And that's the thing. If you rotate, like Living on a Prayer should be every game because that's become like a staple.
Tradition, yeah.
But a tradition, exactly.
I want to rock and roll all night, party every day. That's a great sing-along, get people fired up. They're, you know, little kids.
You know, what about Baby Shark?
For my kids' age group.
I don't know. This is the top 40 right now. Billboard pop charts.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Your thoughts on Baby Shark?
I guess he's gone.
He's gone.
He's going like the wind. All right. Well, yeah. Bubba, we love you, man. He has to work for a living. So.
Right. Bubba had to go teach the children.
Yeah, he has to corrupt the children. Teach the children. Yeah, so.
I think Bob is corrupting anybody.
No, I don't. He's a great guy. I'm totally joking. So, no hate mail to me. Kyle, as far as the letter, I thought it was interesting because there's a word, the T word, trust, that's big for me. Any relationship you have, communication and trust. I don't care if you're friends like we are, communication, trust. If you're obviously you're married, well, all three of us are married, so that's an important part of a relationship is communication and trust. And so,
Definitely. And communication builds trust.
Well, yeah, and you can't go on a shelf at a store and buy trust. So that would be nice if you could. But I felt like John Gilbert with this letter has proven that, and just a short, isn't it amazing, just a short period of time, he's shown the previous administration the right thing to do. I mean, he hasn't been here, and I know that everybody can say they're be controversial. He has still the stuff with Virginia Tech to work out. We have the stuff with, we have that to deal with.
Our
women's basketball coach.
What he's done to me really is essentially, it's really easy, but it's amazing how people could screw up stuff that's easy. To me, being transparent and being open with your fan base and communicating with them is easy. It ain't hard. Confer just did not have – I don't know. I don't even want to get into that, why he didn't do it. He's an idiot.
The problem is that, number one, he was not the right fit for here.
No.
Number two is
– I don't think he's the right fit for anywhere.
Here's the thing. Confer is not – I'm not going to say he's a bad guy because that's not true. But the problem is he didn't know that his position is so political, and it is, that you got to know how to, you know, to literally relate to the fan base. And if you're just going to sit there and not do anything as far as, like, you know, just working behind the scenes, that's the one thing that I think John Gilbert was advised correctly, probably by Dave Hart and others. Correct. You can't come in here and just be an introvert. If you are.
I think he is an introvert, naturally.
No, he is. He is.
But you know, thing about being an introvert is you can be an introvert and still communicate and be trusting. I'll give you an example. My wife's a huge introvert, but she's a teacher. And that would be, you know, her asking her to go socialize and do one-on-one conversations and be outspoken and blah, 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 probably wouldn't be a good idea. But by the same thing, writing letters like that would be right up her alley. She writes letters to her parents, her classroom letter every week. And so being an introvert don't mean you can't communicate and care. It's just how you do it.
Correct. And then that, I think once the things, I was thinking about that this morning, getting ready for the podcast, things just unraveled. And another thing, the best defense is a good offense. So what I mean by that is he's out there showing that, you know, in the letter he's talking about how he's traveling to different, he's already met a lot of people here in Greenville, but yet he's now smart of, like, doing a tour, if you will, of North Carolina, different places of Charlotte and Wilmington and the Outer Banks and Raleigh and all that. And it's going to be coming up over the next few weeks. So
yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. I mean, the more interaction he has with Pirate Nation, the better. I mean, he's going to be a salesman, and I think naturally it probably isn't his strong suit. And normally an AD doesn't really have to be a salesman. Right now he does. I think he's got to get the fan base back interested. And he was dealt a kind of a crappy blow losing Virginia Tech marquee home game because, you know, we got to sell season tickets. And I just think having Mike Houston in here and having a new lease on life at the football program will help the season ticket sales. But that's something else, man. Gilbert's got a huge responsibility there, and to try to find a replacement for Virginia Tech. This year, there probably won't be a suitable replacement. I think, you know, the best option, someone mentioned something about Wake Forest, and they have an FCS opponent on the 21st, and they have seven home games. Yes, correct. And if there was any way we could convince them to drop that seventh home game and just play six and come play us, even if it means we give them two more, you know, games up there or whatever. But that would be
Willing to do that.
Yes, in this situation, that's
a situation where you definitely do that. And
yes, and it would be a suitable replacement. It would be a team we haven't played in a while. It would be a big draw. But they're
way better now with Dave Clawson.
Yeah, they are. That would be great if the odds of that working out. I heard today that on Hoist, Igo said. This is in the VIP chat, so I hope it's okay to share it. If it ain't, I go, just let me know, and we won't do it no more. But he said that we have talked to some Mountain West teams about week zero. Because them, you know, some of those Mountain West teams can play 13 games because of playing at Hawaii, which, David, I mentioned that to you in the conversation, just speculation. Yeah. I wonder if we would do that. And it turns out we are. So I'd be interested to see if that can go anywhere. I do think we are still working to try to find an FBS opponent. I think if we were going to we may end up going the FCS route out of.
I think that's the last resort.
Because we have to, yes.
Yeah.
But I think if we were going to go FCS, if that was, we would have already done it. Exactly. So, and we may end up going FCS just because we have to. But I still think they're trying to find an FBS opponent. I don't know if Air Force plays at Hawaii this year, but if we can get Air Force,
would be cool.
That would be a big draw because
Seymour
Johnson and Goldsboro. Yeah. I mean, the Air Force Academy would be a good draw.
You know how I feel about the service academies. I'm a huge fan of the service academies, and I just think that very thing. I think when you play an opponent. You and I have talked about this as far as recruiting or regional. It has to make sense. And having the big military presence that we have in Eastern North Carolina, it makes perfect sense to. I'm not saying play the military academies all the time.
No.
But this particular situation, Air Force would be.
Get them in here, man. Like I say, I don't know if they play at Hawaii this year. I don't. They obviously play Hawaii. I don't know if it's in. For them to be able to play a 13th game, it has to be at Hawaii.
Correct. Right.
So it could
be their home, and that would not help us out. So.
Correct. And I don't know. I just know that, like I said, we had talked to some Mountain West teams. One team I do think that may have some interest in playing us, and I don't know, maybe they already have a 13th game schedule, but I do remember Hawaii played at Colorado State this year. So I do know Colorado State plays at Hawaii. Colorado State recruits the Southeast a lot because Mike Barbosa there.
That would be great.
So I would imagine they would have some interest in playing us just because he recruits. I know he recruits South Carolina and Georgia a lot. So that if we could work that out, that would be a good, solid name.
And here's another thing. I think that, you know, when you have a new president come in, I'm talking about the United States, there's always the first crisis. How are they going to handle their crisis? Well, John Gilbert, the first quote-unquote crisis is, to me, the whole Virginia Tech debacle. However that happened, it doesn't matter. It's unfortunately, he inherited it. It's now on his watch. So how he handles this, meaning the scheduling of the games, I think will be crucial, especially, as you said, you've got the new stadium opening up. And as far as the Southside project, it's going to be brand new. Yeah. You want to have an exciting schedule. And no offense, you know, we have the first game will be Gardner Webb, and that's fine if that's the first home game potentially. But to have another one on there, and if it's week zero, can you imagine the stadium open? That's what you're talking about,
all
right?
If we can work that out, I mean, and that's a big if.
Yeah.
But that would be before Gardner Webb, you know, week zero, if you could get an Air Force or a Colorado State in there. You know, that would be a much
what do you, What do you think? What do you think it would take financially? Do you think it would take more than what we're normally giving? Would we be willing to do that to give them money?
Well, I mean, typically what you want to do when you have those week zero games, you're playing at Hawaii. Typically, you want to schedule an extra home game.
Yeah.
So we would have to give them some money, and maybe even, like I say, be willing to. You damn sure normally wouldn't do a 2-for-1 with Air Force Colorado State. It would have to be a home for home. Right now, you may have to be willing to do that.
And that would be, and again, normally I wouldn't, and I want to preface that. Normally I would not.
Never do a 2-for-1 with the Mountain West school. That's an equal, but you in this situation.
We have to, kind of like make lemonade, right?
Exactly.
And I mean, it's much better to have them on the schedule. And where we only have to win 6 games to get to a bowl game, that's where I'm getting at.
Right.
Then to have to win 7, I mean, that would be so bad for Mike Houston.
Plus, Air Force would be a good draw if it were Air Force, and this is totally speculatory. If it was Air Force, that would be a really good draw. People would come out for that. And also, I shared this information. It was from Hoist the Colors VIP chat. Guys, if you want to be privy to this kind of information on a regular basis, what you need to do is go subscribe to Hoist the Colors.
.net
and get yourself a VIP membership. And then you too can be privy to a little tidbit such as this, little behind the scenes rumors, innuendos.
Right.
Exactly.
And you can go there. And let me just say for Steven, not only is he a great guy, and he's been on the podcast a lot, one of our favorites, but he works really, really hard. And there's a lot of times you go to places and, you know, you could spend money on the premium, you know, behind the wall kind of site, you know, kind of thing, and it's not good stuff. Let me tell you about Steven. He works so hard with his connections and everything that the dude, I always joke with him, when do you ever sleep? You have a wife, you've got a life outside, you know, but he's obviously constantly thinking about how to improve, you know, like the content on hoistthecolors.net. If not, he wouldn't have the subscribers he has. And I would just say that's one of the sites I look at every single day. In my sports journey, there's other ones that I look at, but I won't talk about them. That are non-EC related.
I've had a terrible day, David.
What?
There's other ones I look at, but I won't talk about those.
Well, because we're talking about Steven right now. It's not anything wrong with them.
Okay, gotcha.
There's sports like, you know.
There's sports related site. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. Not, I'm just saying that I'm trying to give Steven the love right now. There's not even
I understand, David.
But anyway, so for me, Gilbert did a great job with that. I think that we can definitely move on. And there's been a new chapter, and I think he's proven that he can be trusted. And I think, again, I know we're still in the honeymoon period. My God, it's only been,
not long. Not even 2 months, that's for sure. December.
And we're in mid-January, so yeah, a month and a half. So.
Like
December 3rd, and so we're at a point now where we've got to...
You know, in a way, it seems like it's been longer ago than that. You know, in a way, I know it hasn't been, but in a way, it kind of seems that way. I don't, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think he's proven to be... You know, like we talked about, the trustworthy, all the stuff. And then, on top of that, he has a great opportunity now. He's kind of eased, calmed the water, so to speak.
Yeah.
And now he has a situation where he can build upon that.
Well, you know what's so funny is when you come in and you take over for a guy like Comper, it's a negative and a positive. The negative is you got to rebuild a bunch of crap. The positive is Pirate Nation despises Jeff Comper so much. As long as you don't come in and screw it up, they're going to like you. You know what I mean? Anything is – it's that, we can't get any worse kind of thing, and, of course, it always can. But people dislike Jeff Comper so much that naturally Gilbert's easy to like just because the previous guy, you're like, well, thank God you're not Jeff Comper.
The Grinch.
Yeah.
The Comper that stole East Carolina.
Exactly.
Have a Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to, when you said that was true, the thing I was so frustrated is that the business I am in is you find yourself going, how in the world, when things are so easy, you were talking about that earlier, how can you do something? I mean, it's so easy and you're screwing it up.
Well, I think it's just, you know, I think he got caught up in with Comfer. I think he got caught up in catering to a small group of fans. And I really, with all Comfer's, you know, negatives, what ended up just destroying him was the way he handled Ruffin McNeil and the way he handled the fans after the Ruffin McNeil situation that was critical of him. And at the end of the day, that's what, you know, his person, he couldn't come back from it. He didn't yeah. have the personality to come back from making a huge
and here,
mistake.
Here's another thing, too, is that I think the funny thing for me is just simply that he really thought, and maybe that was the one thing I'll say, the arrogance, is that he thought that he could get a big-name person. And it is East Carolina. But if we had the several million dollars a year that we could give to coaching staff, then he could have afforded to fire McNeil, get a really big coach in here. And I'm talking about, in his eyes, understand where I'm coming from. There are a lot of great coaches like Houston that were out there. But in his eyes, we got to fire McNeil, we'll get this big-name coach in, and we'll start winning conference championships. And it was
yeah,
all about
– Yeah, the guy he was going after ain't even coaching anymore.
Yeah. So that was his downfall, is that he underestimated – He underestimated, number one, he underestimated the fans. He thought that there's a group of people that he was listening to, you were talking about, that were, they were telling him, yeah, all you have to do is just fire Ruffin, nobody likes him, and all this stuff. And I think that he found out, after he fired McNeil, he didn't realize how much people loved McNeil, and how bad they would miss him. And how bad that he would be treated after the fact. He would have never done that if he had known how bad.
No, of course not. I mean, I'm just glad he's gone. And
yeah.
His buddy Shelley, and I'm just glad they're all gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. Yeah, to close it out in the Gilbert letter, it's a good informative letter. Good job, good start. And just keep it up, and we'll hopefully get a nice surprise and get an FBS opponent in here, but if not, it's really not his fault.
Right. It's not. And that goes back to the tremendous, sarcastically I'm saying, athletic director at Virginia Tech. And they're going to have to, every dog has his day. And I tell you what, they're going to find out after the decision made like that to pull out on East Carolina. They're going to find out, and now they had to set. And then you pull out on East Carolina, who they don't want to admit is a good opponent, as far as the marketing, you know, like the regional team and all that. And then you have to schedule an FCS team that nobody. I mean, the Virginia Tech fans are pissed about that. So anyway, we can. I'm not going to spend the whole podcast talking about Virginia Tech or their athletic director. I still like the school. I don't like the athletic director, and that's my opinion. Moving on, I felt like I wanted to talk about Scotty Montgomery got a job this week, so very happy for him at the University of Maryland as offensive coordinator. Have you had a chance to digest that and let it marinate a little bit?
Yeah, Maryland. I personally think, I don't like the head coaching hire. I think Mike Locksley, or however you say his last name. Yeah. He was a terrible head coach at New Mexico. He went like 3-30, something like that.
It was not good. Yeah,
terrible record in New Mexico. I think being the OC at Alabama ain't that hard. Then he brings in Scotty Montgomery as his OC. Congratulations to Scotty Montgomery for getting a job as offensive coordinator at Maryland. Maryland fans, get ready to go 2-10. In the Big Ten with those two guys, are you kidding me?
You must have been thinking about like me, because I was thinking about this actually yesterday. I was thinking about the fact, can you imagine, first of all, the Maryland fans don't like being out of the ACC, but that's a whole other podcast, number one. the fact that
the Maryland fans ain't happy with anything. They wanted to run Ralph Regan away, and it was the last time they were good.
I know, but I'm talking about the whole issue that they were a better fit, which they were in the ACC.
Absolutely, yes.
They had more of a chance in football.
And
then they have a good basketball
program.
So anyway, that's a whole other thing. But anyway, I was getting at the fact that what I'm saying is their administration, their alums are still pissed about that. That was several years ago. Then,
some aren't.
Well, I think more than what you realize, but it doesn't matter anyway. The fact of the matter is, I was thinking about the fact that you've got Scotty Montgomery, and you look at the fact that they're going to go against Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, for sure. Then I know there's guys in the West, but my God, Purdue is better. Yeah. Indiana is not a joke anymore.
Nebraska is going to be good again. Iowa is always solid.
Wisconsin is always good.
Yeah, I think it was hired the OC from Alabama. Well, you got to look at what he did prior to there. He was a terrible head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, he's maybe a fine OC, but he's a terrible head coach. And then Montgomery was an average OC at Duke. And was a terrible head coach. I think they should have, and I guess they just wanted to completely get everybody out of there that was associated with the previous coaching staff and that young man's death out of there. I understand that. I don't think Matt Canada really had much to do with any of that. He hadn't been there any time when all that stuff took place. I think he did a solid job this year. They just missed the bowl game. In year one under a tough situation, I think they probably should have stuck with Canada, but that's their problem. I wish nothing but the best to Scotty Montgomery. He did nothing to me personally. I still think Maryland's going to be terrible. I think they're going to be terrible.
Yeah. I think with Maryland, they're going to have their problems, but I care about East Carolina. So,
right,
good for
exactly.
Scotty Montgomery. That was my whole point. Good for him. And
well, good for East Carolina too, because whatever he makes at Maryland will take away from what we owe him.
Well, we don't have to pay him anything now.
We don't have to pay him anything. What's he making? I thought we had to pay the difference.
I didn't know about that part. I thought that once he got a new job,
unless I misunderstand.
Okay,
we owed him $400,000 times two.
$800,000, right.
Yeah, I believe that was the buyout. If he makes $250,000 let's say he makes $300,000, and he may make over $400,000 at OC at Maryland, we're paying our OC $300,000. So we may not owe him anything, but if there's any difference, we got to pay it. So
okay.
The good thing is there may not be any difference, though.
Right. Well, even if there is, it'll be better than
– Correct.
That actually helps us out. Regardless of how much it is, how little or a lot, it'll still help us out. So let's go now to East Carolina has their final swim meet of the year, by the way, Kyle. And we had a chance to sit down at one-on-one with Coach Matt Jabs. A lot of fun. Let's do that right now. Our next guest is one that we wanted to have on for a good while now, Coach Matt Jabs, the head coach of swimming and diving. Coach, thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate you having me.
I know you've been, two or three years now at East Carolina?
Oh, well, this is my second season as the head coach, but I've actually been here, swam here 96 to 2000 and was an assistant coach in various capacities up until I took over last season.
Okay, I didn't know that, so I'm learning on the job here.
Yeah.
I wanted to, talk about the season. I know you guys are 3-2. Can you give the fans a little recap of
sure.
the season so far?
Absolutely. Our men are 3-2. Our women are sitting at 3-3 right now. It's been a good season. Been swimming really, really well and diving really well. Kind of been building as the season's gone on. What we look for, we want to, time-wise, continue to improve every time we hit the water. And then kind of the results will be what they be meet by meet. We're coming off South Carolina where we swam really, really well on the men's side, headed into UMBC this Saturday, home meet. It's good to be home. We were kind of a road team this year. Really looking forward to this meet. This is always a good one. They're a good group. They're a talented group up there, UMBC, and it seems like every time we go up against them, it's a very competitive meet. So it'll be our senior weekend, so we'll be recognizing our seniors, and they're excited, and the team's ready to go.
I know you guys are doing that at 12:40 at Menjie's, and then at 1 o'clock is when the meet starts?
That's correct.
That'll be great to get a home crowd. As far as the different meets go, I know that you've got this one, and you have another one. Is it the Nike Invitational? I saw it at Carolina at UNC.
Yes, we'll be going to UNC. That meet's kind of more of just kind of a race tune-up for our championship meet. We have a few weeks between this UMBC meet we have coming up and our championship meet at the end of February. So we just want an opportunity to race. We'll probably go in there. We probably won't swim a full lineup. We'll pick one or two races per athlete and just get an opportunity to kind of get up and race one more time before we head to our championship meet. So kind of like a final tune-up.
Can you talk about the different swimmers on the men and women's side, ones that really stand out, the ones that that really are your, like, I want to say stars, because everybody is important on the team. It's a team sport, but what are the
absolutely
ones that have been your leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, from a leadership standpoint, on the men's side, our captains are outstanding. We've got two veteran guys, both seniors this year. One, Victor Santos, is one of our international students from Brazil. He's been with us for 4 years. He's kind of got a quiet leadership style about him, but the kids respect him a lot. He works really, really hard, and he performs. He delivers every single time. And then our other captain on the guy's side is Kelly Barnhill, a local Greenville guy. Known him for a really, really long time. Great kid. Is a big-time relay swimmer for us. I can go to him for anything I need, if I need something, and we're really lucky to have him as one of our leaders. On the women's side, we're really, really young. We have a young group kind of leading the way. We have Sophie McNeil as one of our captains. She's kind of taking the lead and kind of taking over the vocal part of leading the women's team. And then on a performance side, the guys' side is really talented, pretty much top to bottom. We got a great group of guys. But kind of leading the way, returning breaststroker, Jacek Artwins, was the two-time champion, both in the 100 and 200 breaststroke at conference last year, is having another outstanding year, swimming really, really well and even faster than he was last year at this point, so we're excited about him. Gustavo Santos, our lead butterflyer, won the 100 butterfly at conference last year. Swimming also very well, a little bit quicker than he was last year, so we're excited to see what he does at the end of the year. And we've picked up some youngsters that have done some really special things for us this year, in Marek Osina, an incoming freshman, my opinion, one of the best freshmen in the country, has done an outstanding job, can swim just about anything we put him in, and do it really well, swimming really fast. And then we've picked up a mid-season addition, and Lubomir Eptrepov from Bulgaria. He's another breaststroker who's come in right away with last meet against South Carolina. It was very impressive, and he'd only been with us for a week and is really kind of pushing Jacek to give us kind of a really strong 1-2 punch. And then, like I said, we've got a lot of other guys that are doing some good things. And then on the women's side, Mariana Vignoli is one of our distance girls. Came in, she's a freshman, came in, has performed very, very well. We're excited about her future and what she's got going on. Lily West, a UK swimmer, grad transfer, has been doing really good in the breaststroke, and I am really pleased with what she's been added to the, what she's added to the roster. And then another young freshman in Shannon Stott, one of our flyers, has come in and again stepped up. And we got young people coming in and stepped up. It gives you some excitement about the future.
As far as recruiting, and do you go internationally, or is it something that you're looking, I guess, pretty much everywhere for talent to swim at East Carolina?
Absolutely. We're worldwide. We don't really care where you're from as long as you're fast, and on the diving side, as long as you're talented. Those are the things we look for. I've got a great director in recruiting in Kate Moore, my associate head coach. She kind of heads that part up of the program, and she does an absolutely outstanding job. finding kids and getting them here to campus. If they're international, we typically won't have them come to campus, but we're doing Skype calls with them. We're on the phone with them weekly. We're doing videos of campus and kind of doing a virtual tour, so to speak, so they can get a feel for what it's like here. And then our kids are the best part of our program from a recruiting standpoint. They're just a great group of athletes and a great group of kids. When we do have kids on campus, they're so welcoming, and the environment we created here and they created here is something that's pretty special.
Coach, as far as I know in other sports, do you have walk-ons? Can you help me educate me on that?
Sure. Typically, everybody on our roster is recruited. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean everybody on our roster is on scholarship. But we recruit every athlete we have on our roster. Nobody really kind of comes in the fall and tries out and makes their way to the roster. That's not how we do it. So everybody we have is somebody we've recruited, somebody we've had conversations with, we've learned about, talked with coaches, those sorts of things. So that's kind of how we go about filling our roster.
I've always said that swimming and diving is one of the best sports we have at East Carolina, and I've always called you guys the program at East Carolina, the Hidden Gem, one of the most consistent sports we have.
Well, we definitely appreciate that. We work hard at it. It's something that we take a lot of pride in. You know, Coach Kobe, my predecessor, is something he took a lot of pride in, and that's continued. You know, I swam here. Coach Kate, my associate head coach, was also a swimmer here. So there's a lot of pirate blood running through the program, and it's something we take a lot of pride in.
I know the men's team earlier in the year was ranked. Wasn't the women's team as well?
The women's team was not. They were not. Okay. They were just outside. I think a lot of that has to do with the youth of our program. But we're fighting and working to get them both up there.
What do you as far as I know? The one question I had is looking at the schedule. Indianapolis, is that typically where you'd have the tournament for the conference tournament?
The championship kind of rotates. Sure. The two pools within the conference, or the two schools within the conference that have facilities that could host the championship, one being Houston and one being SMU, those are the two places within the conference that the championship is typically held, and they try to find a third site to kind of get a rotation going. We've had the championship in Greensboro, and this year we're actually rotating up to Indianapolis. So this will be the first time for us in this conference at that facility. Back when we were in the Conference USA, we competed one championship there, I believe, at the facility. So it's a great pool. It's really fast. They hold some of the biggest meets in the country there. So we're excited to get up there and see what we do.
That's outstanding. And then that'll be, is that the end of February, if my memory serves me right, for that?
Yeah, last week of February, and it'll take us into the first 2 days of March, I believe.
And then you have, is it the NCAAs after that?
Yeah, what will happen is we have some divers that have qualified for the zone championship, and in diving what you do is you get a qualifying score, and then you'll compete against other schools from a zone. And there are only so many slots from each zone that is allowed to go on to the NC2A championships. So we have a few divers that will go to zones first. And then on the NC2A side of it, that's an invitational type deal. We got to achieve some certain times and be within around the top 30 is typically where that cut line falls. We got a couple guys that I think will be right there. On the girls' side, we're probably just outside that. But we'll see what we do at the championship meet and kind of see where we fall after everybody else's championship meets go by as well. I think at that meet, we'll have a really good idea of where we stand.
And finally, I was going to ask you, what do you guys do in the off season to prepare for the season? What kind of workouts? Swimming is one of the most difficult sports for people that don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. There really isn't an off season in swimming and diving. What we do is, as soon as we get back from our championship meet and our season is completed, those kids that are done with have NC2As will continue to train. But those who are not going on NC2As, they'll get a couple weeks off. They've been with us since they set foot on campus. They need some time away from us. So they get, you know, two and a half weeks where they can just kind of go do their thing and be regular college student and relax a little bit and recover. And then we jump back into our postseason, which is in a required 8 hours per week. And we'll kind of get back into swimming and lifting and those sorts of things. It's obviously a reduced schedule from our normal everyday in-season schedule, but it works out really well. We have a handful of kids that are training to compete for meets when they get home, especially our international kids that are making national teams and those sorts of things. So they'll be doing their work. And then over the summer, those that decide to stay will train here. We'll have opportunities for them to come in and train. And then those that go home, you know, they'll get back with their club programs and the teams that they were training with prior to coming to college, and they'll train right through the summer to get ready for the fall.
I want to remind people to pack Menchie's this Saturday. Coach, is there any charge for people to get in for the Pirate fans listening right now?
Absolutely not. It's 100% free. We want to pack this place. Like I said, we were on the road most of the year. We've had two home meets, the first one against UNC, and this place was slammed. It was one of the most exciting, fun meets that we've ever had. We want to do the same thing this Saturday. So please come on out. Check it out. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. There'll be a lot of energy, so you won't be disappointed.
Well, Coach, I bleed purple and gold, a graduate of 95 there at East Carolina, and I know that everybody in Pirate Nation is pulling hard for you. And good luck Saturday for the home meet.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Dave.
Go out and support Pac Menchie's this week. We're going to have a great, that'll be actually tomorrow, and we want to make sure you go there and support a lot of seniors, senior day there for the Pirates, 12:40, and then the meet will start at 1 o'clock with University of Maryland there, so Maryland Shore, I think it is. But anyway, we've got another great guest. Interim coach had a tough year so far with basketball, for women's basketball. Let's go to Coach Nicole Milling, and let's do that right now. Very excited to have the interim basketball coach for the women Lady Pirates, and that's Nicole Milling. Coach, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to have you guys on, you ladies on. Want to have you on, Coach, because I know that's a big opportunity for you coming off, and now you've actually been on the staff, I know, a while, starting off doing videos, and then you actually were the assistant coach, and now head coach. How does it feel to be head coach now of the Lady Pirates?
As you could expect, I'm kind of surprised by everything that has gone on here, but I'm adjusting pretty well to it. I'm not making it about me at all. It's about the staff. It's about the girls, and we're just trying to get through the season as best we can and get some wins under our belt.
Well, so far, you guys, I know we're 10-6 on the year, and you actually, I know that your first assignment as head coach was at Cameron Indoor Stadium, taking over the team, no pressure, right? How was that experience being your the very first time as a head coach to coach in Cameron?
No pressure, that's right. I think I said this before, we don't feel pressure over here. Our staff doesn't feel pressure. Players don't feel pressure. We apply pressure. But playing in Duke was very exciting for all of us.
As far as I know that Heather Macy was, I know you've said, was your mentor. What did you learn from Coach Macy, and what does she mean to you?
With Coach Macy, I think the most important thing that I learned from her, that is all about the details. That's what's key, the details. You have to be, you know, just detailed in the way that you prepare for the game.
As far as I know that you guys are still on the men and women, actually, for basketball, looking for the first road win on the season. Right now, you guys are 0-4, I think. What does it take to break through and get that first road win against Memphis?
For road games, I think the most important thing is that we have to rebound and we have to make free throws. Those two things there alone can win you the game on the road, and also just defending on the road. That's always key. Going into somebody else's environment, we got to be able to perform on both ends of the floor.
As far as I know with the team this year, can you talk about some of the ladies that really stand out that you're really proud of?
Well, Raven, first off, I know last year she kind of struggled throughout the season, but she put in a lot of extra time this year, and it's just paying off for her. She's doing a really good job on both sides of the ball for us this year. Ashonda Monk, she can impact the game in various ways. She leads the team in scoring right now, steals, free throw attempts, and she's second in assists, and she's also averaging 5.3 rebounds a game for us in conference play. So she's just doing a really good job. She's impacting the game in a lot of ways. Alex Frazier is finally coming along. You know, she was out for a few of the first games, but she's back now. She's just doing a good job. She's a good leader for us, and she has the experience.
As far as women's basketball as a whole, the sport has really grown. I think that from my time growing up to now, it's really exciting game. Can you talk about how much the sport has grown over the years, especially in recent years?
I think that Coach Macy did a really good job of building this program from the ground up. Just getting the right players in here has helped us a lot. Like, these girls, they really do care and love each other, so that has helped. And just with recruiting in general, like, you get all these other recruits on campus, and they can feel that energy from the girls, and that has helped us bring in better players.
With the record you have now, is there a certain record you have to get in the conference tournament, or is that something that every team gets in for the American?
Every team gets into the conference tournament.
Okay. And I know we want to see the Pirates do well. As far as the season goes, I know with Wednesday night you guys have UCF, right?
Yes.
Home?
It's home, yes.
And we want people to pack that out. I know it's a very exciting atmosphere. And I know with the you guys had a game this year the half-court shot, was that? Okay, I was trying to remember. There was a game where you had all the students.
Oh, that was against Liberty.
Justin
G hit the shot at the end to win the game for us as time expired. Yeah, that was Liberty.
Yeah, so that game, I know that you guys had a tremendous, speaking of atmosphere, that's where I was headed with that. What was it like playing there in Williams Arena with so many people there in the arena?
The energy was amazing, and I think our players fed off of that energy. They really played hard that game. They were dialed in for the 40 minutes that we needed them to be dialed in for, and the energy was just amazing. Really good energy. We love that environment, yes.
As far as the American is concerned, we obviously know about UConn. What other teams on the ladies' side are really difficult this season?
Central Florida and Tulane are doing really good on our side this year. And, you know, you always have to worry about South Florida. They're always in the top tier of the league.
As far as the coach, as far as recruiting is going, how is it? I know you can't talk specifics of as far as players, but do you have certain ones that could really make a difference this year that you're looking for? Is there certain needs that you have this year?
Definitely there's a need in the post for next – are you talking about for next season?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, for next season there is a need in the post. We're losing four, and in that is Desiree Corbin, Destiny Campbell, and Salita Green. So we do need to fill that void for next season. And I think we're doing a really good job of being on the phones and just staying in contact with recruits.
If you had a chance, if I'm a recruit now, what would you say to me? I love East Carolina, and obviously a graduate of East Carolina now doing the podcast. What would you say to me to sell me on coming to East Carolina?
Well, the most important thing here is the people. I think if we just get you on campus, you're going to see that the environment and the vibe that the people feed off. You're going to love that environment. They're so welcoming, and it's just a great environment to be in. The fans they're great. The fans are great. Pirate Nation is great, and they want to see all their teams succeed.
Well, Coach, I know that you guys are getting ready for Memphis. Good luck in Memphis, and we want to get everybody out next Wednesday night, and that's a home game against UCF, and folks can go to ecupirates.com and get your tickets, or 1-800-DIAL-ECU. Coach Mueling, thank you so much. I know you're very busy. I appreciate your time this morning.
All right, thank you, and I hope to see you at the game Wednesday.
Good luck to the Lady Pirates, still looking for their first road win, kind of like the guys looking for their first road win. So good luck to them against Memphis this weekend. You know, Kyle, that's one thing about the basketball. What were your thoughts on the Temple game?
Well, I thought we competed well. Big deficit in the first half. Nice rally to make it a game in the second half. Temple's a tough team. They're really good. We played well. We are at a talent disadvantage right now in this conference in basketball. But we're playing hard. As long as we're playing hard and we're competitive in all these games, we'll get some more wins. It's a building year. It's fun to watch the guys play with such effort. Got to play smart, but we play with a lot of effort. and it's fun to watch us. And like I say, we'll get some more wins as the year goes on. So as long as we're in these games and we're competitive, and you can't ask for much more in year one, except, you know, like I say, we need to get a couple more of these W's. Losing close games is no moral victories. But anyway, playing hard, and a lot of effort.
Yeah, we need to say that we got to get the recruiting better. And as a matter of fact, I had a chance to go to the press conference, and we'll do that now. We'll play the press conference, get the thoughts from the both coaches, and also we had a chance to sit in with KJ Davis and Jaden Gardner, also talk after the game, and let's play that right now.
He made an impossible jumper that helped us, and a big one in the corner right in front of our bench as well. So he's, when you have that kind of senior leadership, you feel comfortable, not to the point where you know everything's going to turn out okay, because you don't. But I was pleased with how we came back and spaced the game a little bit to the end.
Coach, ECU entered third in the nation in three-point defense. You guys shoot 50% of the what was the difference tonight?
Well, she was 7 for 10. I mean, it's not for him. We're not shooting 50%. I thought we shot pretty good threes. I don't think we shot too many contested threes, although a couple of his were. I thought those guys were in the neighborhood. It was our night to, certainly Shiz's night to make 7 for 10 threes is pretty good. So we were grateful for that. 12 turnovers was not what we were hoping to get. And then our defense in the second half was not very good. A lot of that is Gardner and the rest of those guys.
Coach, when games are close, your team seems to have a comfort level. I've been watching the team over the last few games and show you game tonight.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope that we have, because we have that senior leadership, and we were benefited by getting to the bonus sooner than we typically do. So, and then we got into the two shots out for a stretch there too, and our man Ernest the Flagpie goes 4 for 4 at the line. That's not necessarily what Ern does. We're grateful for that. So it's one of those nights that we did shoot well from the foul line.
What they give you before the game? What does a stone mean?
It is. And I wasn't sure what Joe was giving to me there. I have an 8-month-old grandson. I'm hoping that he'll be grateful to have it. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it for sure. But I really appreciate the hospitality that East Carolina showed. As I said to Joe, you don't really have to do this. He said some very nice things. So very, very appreciative of him. Nice. It's a great league. It's some really good people. So I'm appreciative of the attention. I would rather crawl underneath the stands, to be honest with you, but I'm appreciative.
Any questions?
Thanks.
Hey, Jay, talk about what does it take mentally to kind of help see a comeback in that first half when you guys were down by 20. What's going on in the huddle to spark what really occurred?
Just waking up, you know. We didn't come out to play, we didn't come out to play at all today. And it took us to really, you know, just come together, rally our guys up. We went to halftime, you know, we went in the locker room, tried to go over everything that we were doing wrong. And you know, we went out second half, came out pretty hard, so yeah.
Jaden, talk about the first half a little bit. What you felt was going on with the slow start?
I played awful. I got to play better than that. I got to understand when to take the right shots, and got to trust my teammates. And I settled down the second half, and teammates started finding me the ball, and I started hitting shots, and I made key free throws down the stretch, and we just all have to play together and play good and get back on defense. It was just. Just a bad loss today.
What was it in that first half? It almost looked like there was a lid on the bucket for you guys. You guys just couldn't get anything before.
We couldn't make a shot. I know Seth had like 5 bunnies that he always usually makes, and it just hurt us tonight.
In the second half early, Jaden, there, you and Sean had three pointers on back-to-back possessions that would have given ECU the lead. Was that one of those the emotions of y'all wanted to kind of get the lead so bad there? And obviously a shot could have made a huge difference either way.
Yeah, we're just trying to get the right shot, and we just tried to play as hard as we can.
KJ, what did you see in this Temple team that you guys wanted to emulate and that really helped them, you know, stay cool throughout?
I think just their poise. You know, they got a lot of older guys, older guards. So, you know, we'll get there. I have no doubt that we'll get there. And I see us growing, but, you know, we just have to, you know, mature a little bit. I think that's what they have that we don't.
What did Coach Dewey tell you guys at halftime to get that spark? It seemed like a difference between the two halves in the first half and the second half.
He really didn't say anything. He said you guys figured it out, and we talked, and we came together as a unit and made a decision. Do we want to play, or do you just want to get rolled over? And we decided to fight, and you saw the run we made.
Seemed like during that run in the beginning of the second half, the crowd was really into it. Did you guys feed off their emotion, their energy?
Yeah, we feed it off good to the crowd tonight. It was a really good crowd out there today.
Can you tell a difference, Jaden, when y'all playing, like you said, a team that has a bunch of seniors and experienced teams? Can you tell maybe something out of the court and learn from moments like that at all?
Yeah, you can, because there's stretches during the game. You just see the difference in experience levels, and they're a very experienced older team, good coach, and we just have to learn. We just still learning, still trying to learn how to win because we're young, but can't keep using that excuse every time. You just got to learn how to win.
Very disappointed in the start, and I don't think that we had played like that in a while. Obviously, a lot of that's attributed to Temple, but we just didn't seem in sync from the get-go. Obviously, getting down 24-4 doesn't help. Did dig ourselves out of a hole, which was good to see. We did fight back, and then too many breakdowns on things that we have not done in a long time. So that was really disappointing. Disappointed for the way we played in front of our crowd. I thought we had a great crowd, and apologetic for the way that the performance that we put on. But you can't do that against a good team, and they're a very good team, too good to do that against like we did tonight.
So you guys entered third in the nation in three-point defense. Temple shoots 50%, shoots 70%. What was the breakdown beyond the arc defensively?
Everything was a breakdown. It was we didn't tag like we were supposed to. I mean, we did things in there that we hadn't done in a while, even in practice. And I don't know, going back through it, we'll have to see some things. But, you know, you've got talented players. I mean, Alston is a very good player, and he can make shots off the bounce. And, you know, once you see the ball go through the basket, it seems contagious. You know, just like us, we've had a lot of open shots that we didn't make. And, you know, sometimes that becomes a little bit of a pattern.
Do you think frustration set in after that the opening to the game where it looked like guys, shots they normally make just weren't falling?
Well, I think we were a little frustrated, but we were able to get back to, you know, you're down one with four possessions to get the lead. And, you know, we got rushed as opposed to executing. We played a little bit faster than we should have, and that's part of learning how to win.
Y'all, given the first 9 points against Cincinnati, you fell behind early against Central Florida. Is there anything that kind of is in common about that pattern, and what do you do to get off to better starts?
I think a lot of that get off to better start. I don't know. I mean, I'm befuddled by that. I think that, you know, part of it's on the coaches that we've got. But a lot of it's being ready to play and preparing, which the guys for the most part have done a good job. But we'll reevaluate what we're doing.
Going back on the road, what are the dynamics that you need to pay attention to? I guess with them, you know, maybe the home court felt comfortable. How will you kind of use this road game to really wake them up, I guess, for the game like this?
Home, away, you've got to be turned up everywhere. We're not good enough talent-wise to just line up and play. And trying to explain that is not as simple as you think. I mean, we've got to be turned up to the full throttle to be able to compete. And if we're not, we're going to get beat. And even if we are turned up full throttle, we might get beat. But if you don't give yourself the best chance to be turned up, we are not going to win. And effort should be a constant. It shouldn't be something that you're congratulated for or praised for. You should always try hard. And we've got to figure that out. And now if we're not smart enough to figure out what happened last year in the first half there, then we're not very alert. And they should be very on high alert after what happened the first half at Houston last year.
Coach,
You mentioned being rushed at times the second half on offense. Was some of that, some of those three-pointers, just maybe the emotions of the crowd and wanting to hit that?
There's some, you know, and you know, you can't fault guys for being aggressive. You know, let's get the lead. But, you know, sometimes you need to be a little bit more poised. Some of the guys that are out there haven't played a lot of minutes. Some of the guys that, you know, you would hope would be a little bit more poised. You get a little amped up. Those are the times you need to be smarter and execute better. And that's all part of the process of learning how to win. Is don't do what's easy. Do the right thing.
Jaden and KJ talk about you can see with Temple their experience kind of down the stretch. What's it like kind of seeing that from the sideline, their guards being able to take over, obviously?
Well, I mean, that's you know, it's obviously we're trying to strive to get our programs to try to get older, and that you can't microwave it, and you know we are where we are, but when you know, the thing to me is we didn't look like the team to play the last two games or last three games. That's what's disappointing.
You limit the turnovers to just four in the second half. How much of this just comes down to just hitting baskets?
I think, you know, like you said, I mean, seeing the ball go in the basket raises everybody's energy level. I don't care who you are or where you are, it does. And, I mean, I think the last game we went back, you know, of the 41 threes on the road trip, we, you know, we were 9 for 41 and we went back and charged. I think we had 35 wide open shots. And at some point, you know, you got to have some confidence to jump up and shoot it and make it. The speed of the game is a little bit different in practice, but, you know, the percentages we talk about, the percentages don't lie. Over the.
All right. Well, the Pirates have off until next Wednesday, so it'll be a good chance to get them a little bit of rest, I guess, regrouping, if you will, the intensity. They've got to play harder. They know that. So we'll let the coaches coach and Coach Julian's staff, and I'm sure they'll handle it. Kyle, I know this weekend, one thing I want to mention before we go, and get your final thoughts. It's very sad that Bill's barbecue at Wilson closed. I want to get your thoughts before we go on that.
Yeah, Bill's barbecue, you know, I always enjoyed their food. They had good barbecue, good coleslaw. I don't know the whole situation there. You know, I went to the convention center there. They used to have a little convention center there by the barbecue restaurant. I went to see wrestling there, TNA Impact Wrestling, and another wrestling show I went to see there. David, you were the master of ceremonies, if you will, for when you were working at the Big Dog there in the ring to pump up the crowd.
They literally, you know, I was supposed to just do a promotional thing, you know, and be there. And then they look at me about 5 minutes before the show started. They're like, I know you're the radio station. The people love you here. This is what they've got, said, paraphrasing. He looks at me and says, can you go in there and warm up the crowd? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I had nothing prepared.
This was 09, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 09. Yeah, exactly. So,
was it 09 or early 2010? It was early 2010. No, it was January of 2010.
Was? Okay.
Was January of 2010. Well, wait a minute. You may be right, David. You are right, my friend. It was January 09. You're right.
The reason I remember that is our salesperson, she started Wendy, she was there with us, and she's the one that got the account there for TNT and all that. And then she was with me, and she started a few months before, I think a couple months before that event. That's the only reason why I remember. It's not because I knew it was January. It was cold. I had my leather jacket on.
I can remember the date because it was my wife's birthday, and she gave me crap about going to see wrestling on her birthday. Well, I can remember that it was January 09. I actually remember that day vividly for whatever. I think it was because of it being a wrestling event and her birthday. And I just, anyway. Went to see wrestling and had dinner at Pizza Hut. What a birthday she had.
Oh, man. And the doghouse.
But about Bills, go ahead.
I was just going to quickly say about Bills. We actually had our after rehearsal party there. In the convention center area, and so they really were very, very good to us. And so not only did my kids and grandkids, I mean
grandkids, Dave?
No, I meant to say my mother-in-law loves to take the grandkids, which is my kids and her other grandchildren there.
Yeah, your wife is from the Wilson County area. My memories of Bills, like I said, went to see wrestling at the convention center there a couple times, ate at the restaurant there. one of the two times. But we they catered our Christmas dinner at work several times over the years, and they always had good food. The barbecue was always solid. It's the Eastern North Carolina landmark there in Wilson. So it's sad to see them close. I know Bill Ellis passed away a couple of years ago, or maybe it was a year ago, in his 80s. And the family kept it going. My guess is with them closing suddenly, my guess is they were planning on closing and just wanted to keep it quiet until they closed. But it's sad to see them close. They did indicate that there may be franchising opportunities. So that's kind of interesting.
We'll see how it works out. You know, that's such an iconic.
What do you think, Dave? You think we should you, me, and Bubba? Maybe we should franchise out the Bill's Barbecue name and the recipes. And
I think it would be fun to. I think the convention center piece of it, and I think there'll be somebody that will definitely take it over, I think, at some point.
You remember how packed that convention center was the night that the TNA Impact Wrestling was there?
It was unbelievable.
If the fire marshal would have been there, they'd have shut that place down.
It was unbelievable. It was really hot in there.
I don't remember it being hot. I remember it being packed, and I remember, you know, it was at the time TNA Impact was pretty hot on Spike TV, and Booker T was there. I'm having trouble remembering some of the other big names that were there that night.
But biggest name, that wasn't he?
He was one of the biggest names there, and he may have been the biggest. I'm having trouble remembering who else was there.
But that's my point. If you can't remember the names,
good point. Was AJ Styles there? It almost seems like AJ Styles was there, which at the time wasn't a bigger name than Booker T, but now he is. Now AJ's multiple times
big name in WWE.
Yeah. So I think AJ was there, but anyway, it was a pack. That the Bill Ellis Convention Center that night, the event was well promoted, and like I say, I think that place maybe held. It should have held probably 700 to 800, and there was probably 1,500 people in there that night.
Yeah, it was like one of those shoulder to shoulder kind of crowds, standing room only. I mean,
it was standing room only.
And you said Hermie Sadler did that, right?
Hermie Sadler. I'll tell you a little insider information. Hermie Sadler initially going way, way deep in the woods. Hermie Sadler initially TNA Wrestling Impact did not do any house shows. They just did TV, and Hermie did all their promoting for local shows. He ran them. They were all his shows. He actually paid the talent and paid TNA a fee to use the name and to use their talent. And he ran a bunch of shows in the Carolinas and Virginia. And by that point in 2009, TNA Impact Wrestling was doing their own promoting, but this was Hermie's area, so they let Hermie kind of run that show for him to be their road agent, as it's called.
Right.
And so that was an officially TNA promoted show, but Hermie was the of NASCAR fame. Was kind of the road agent, the liaison, and any show he ever had his hands on grew well. He was really good at that. But maybe we could get Hermie on sometime, talk a little wrestling, a little NASCAR.
That would be fun, NASCAR, yeah. We get a lot of people listening to that, for sure.
Yeah, he'd be a good one. Mike Ray. We might fight Mike Ray for just to have Hermie on.
Welcome into the Sports Objective family. I'm glad you said that, because Mike is doing very well promoting the podcast, and so far we're off to a great start. We're going to have that out every Monday. So
yeah, if you're a motorsports fan, spin off of the Sports Objective, Racing with Mike Ray, David hosted with Mike Ray, and Mike's been around stock car racing, God almighty, for long. I've known Mike Ray for 20 years. I've known him for 20 years, and so he's been around a long time.
So make sure that you listen to that, and we have a Sports Subjective spinoff, and you can go on Facebook. You can find the Talking Racing with Mike Ray. You can do that. You can go to our Facebook page too. We have simply you can like the Sports Subjective page. Follow us on Twitter, and that's very simple. at the Sports OBJ. As far as Instagram, it's at the Sports Objective, and so much more. So make sure you do that. Well, Kyle, I've had a great time talking to you, and I know Bubba will have him back next time. He had to go back to work, but we'll have another podcast out very soon, another 1983. I wanted to give you a chance to promote that.
Yeah, we've been talking to the great 1983 team that went 8-3, and their only three losses was to Miami, Florida, and Florida State. And believe me, we had a chance to win all three of those games. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened had we won all three of those games. Would they have given East Carolina a shot at the national championship or called us, you know, national champions? But that arguably the greatest team in East Carolina history, arguably. Obviously, 91 team, we had some say in that. But,
in 78,
83,
and 91, I think.
Yeah, well, and, you know, throw 95 in, you could throw 09 in, 2013 in even. But
yeah.
They were a fantastic team. The amount of players that went off that team to the NFL is astounding.
Yeah. Lucky to have a player or two, right?
Do what?
I said we're lucky now to have a player or two.
Exactly. Yeah. One team I absolutely had the most pro talent. The amount of players that went off that 83 team to the NFL, the USFL, and the Canadian Football League is unreal. But anyway, we're doing a multiple-part recant of the 83 season, having roundtable discussions with multiple players from the teams. When are we releasing the first episode, David?
We've already got the first one out, and
one's out. Okay. Okay.
The next few days we'll have the second one out.
All right. The first one with KK Walker.
Right.
And those guys, the DBs, is already out, and then the second one will be out here soon. And Chuck Northcutt and other guys from the front seven are part of that one. And how many more do we have?
We have a few more because we have about 20 players that have already agreed to do it. So,
oh wow,
yeah,
yeah, we got a few more to go. But yeah, the whole series, and it's really interesting. A lot of us, we kind of just turned them loose. All three, it's a round table, and we kind of just turned them loose and. And, you know, they kind of carry the shows talking about the 83 season and Ed Emery and the games against Missouri and NC State and Florida and Florida State and Miami. And they're definitely good listens. And you learn a lot. And it's fun just to hear those guys interact with each other.
It's great. And they you can feel the love. So just like we have for our podcast. Well, Kyle, my friend, we'll put this podcast to bed. I appreciate you very much. Appreciate Bubba and all the guys and every ladies that listen to the show each and every week. And we'll have another podcast, like we said, out in a few days. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.